Forged from the fires that created a long-lost brotherhood of podcasts comes the Blast Syndicate. We are made up of Focus on Metal, Inside Metal, Iron City Rocks, Mars Attacks, Metal Geeks, MSR Cast, Neckbreaker, Radioactive Metal, and Wiki Metal. We are the Blast Syndicate. Go to BlastSyndicate.com to find out more. Get blasted.
Hey, how you doing out there? This is BB from Power Theory, and you're listening to Focus on Metal. Focus on Metal!
Hey, Metalheads, Scott Thompson here, welcoming you to yet another episode of Focus on Metal. Hope you guys enjoyed last week's episode with Ralph Sheepers of Primal Fear and Mark Fox of Chakra. If you haven't caught that one yet, be sure to head over to either iTunes or on to focusonmetal.net. In fact, either one of those places is a good place to start if you want to go digging through all of our past episodes. Now, iTunes doesn't have the full complete list of them. In fact, I don't even think Focus on Metal has all of them available up there, but the focusonmetal.net episode guide actually does have more of them available for download and streaming than either of our iTunes feeds does. I mean, come on, give me a little bit of a break there. It's almost over 5 years worth of shows to have to juggle around, so a lot of stuff there. But if you are up there perusing all the episodes and the episode you want to listen to doesn't have a download or streaming link, then shoot me an email at scott@focusonmetal.net and I can see what I can do about making that one available for you. So this week we bring you another great guest. That would be Johnny B. Frank, now known as J.B. Frank. Most of you will be familiar with him from his time with Kingdom Come, at least that which is known as the classic lineup of Kingdom Come, which included our frequent guest, James Kotak. So Richie arranged this one, and it's actually a pretty cool tie-in, although it's not a straight-out Little Mountain Sound episode. It's really about the Reformation and upcoming gigs of Kingdom Come, but it does tie in because they were an artist that got a lot of their early start over at Little Mountain Sound, so it kind of ties into a lot of stuff that we've been doing recently. And the other very cool thing about this week's interview is that I have no part in it. That's right. At no point will you hear me utter a single word during the interview. It's all Richie all the time. I just sat back and did the engineering of it. I mean, come on, you hear me every week talking to people, so why not give Richie a big solo spot? So that is coming up right after Track of the Week. Okay, I have got a great Track of the Week for you this week from our friends over at AFM Records and the brand new one that was just put out by Brainstorm called Scary Creatures. You may remember that I featured a track off of the last Brainstorm release, Fire Soul, as one of the Track of the Weeks last year. This time around, like I said, brand new one out called Scary Creatures. And I decided on this one for a few reasons. One of them was because it was the perfect matchup for this week. Got our main guest, Johnny B. Frank, who's the vocalist for Brainstorm, Andy B. Frank. Couldn't get any cooler than that, right? So there's my first thing, was like, hey, I got to do that. It's like the perfect matchup. But then also, these guys are going out on tour this month with Primal Fear and Stryker, both pretty awesome bands. Obviously, we had Primal Fear on last week. Stryker is a band that I'd love to get on the show, and those guys are also very, very killer. If you've never experienced any Stryker stuff before, go search that out. Maybe go on to YouTube, see if you can find some Stryker videos. Guaranteed you are going to like those guys as well. But the artist this week is German power metalers, Brainstorm. These guys have actually been around since 1989. So with lots of history to this band, and they keep on putting albums and DVDs and all kinds of good stuff out all the time. And this release is no exception. And of course, in cool AFM fashion, it is available in a couple of different formats. You've got your regular CD version. You also got a digipack version that has an extra bonus track, plus the bonus live DVD. You can also get the limited edition box set, which is probably sold out at this point, as well as limited vinyl edition. It's 500 units of gold vinyl. And the label is also very cool. They did send me the limited edition digipack, so I got the whole thing. You know, a lot of times we just get the digital download stuff to check out stuff, but actually AFM, you never know when I'm just going to get something in the mail from them, and they did send me the limited edition digipack, so very cool on that one. As I said, Brainstorm out on tour, and if you are listening to this this episode the week that it comes out, then they will have kicked off their tour on Tuesday in Barcelona, going to Barcelona, Madrid, you know, all kinds of places. They will be hitting Paris, and they'll be in Prague and Hamburg and all over Europe until they wrap that tour up on March 12th in Marsburg. So that is going to be a pretty damn amazing tour to see Primal Fear, Stryker, and Brainstorm. Good stuff there. They're just going to get your power metal fix that night. And if you want to keep up with Brainstorm on the net, that would be brainstorm-web.net. And they've already released one single and video off the album. It is called The World to See, but I'm not going to play that one. In listening to the album, one of the things I noticed about a lot of the tracks on this album that also ties into our other guest this week is that a lot of the songs have this, I don't know how to describe it, but this undercurrent of 80s style riffage and stuff happening beneath it, and some overall sound characteristics that you may have heard on albums coming out of LA back in the late 80s. Now, I'm not saying this is a hair metal album. This is definitely a power metal album, but you can just hear some of those elements that are in there as well. And it just lends to the overall hookiness to it as well. So it makes it a very accessible power metal album, but it is power metal indeed. But I thought that instead of playing the single, I would play one of those songs instead. So off of the brand new one, courtesy of AFM Records from Brainstorm, it's called Scary Creatures, and the track I'm playing for you for track of the week this week is We Are. There you go, track of the week, Brainstorm, off their brand new one, Scary Creatures. And again, if you want to find out about those guys, keep up with tour dates and all that good stuff, it is brainstorm-web.net. So now it is time to turn the microphone over to my buddy Richie as he does an interview with bassist Johnny B., now known as JB Frank. One of the original members of Kingdom Come. Great stuff on here. Some Little Mountain talk in here. Some Aerosmith stories. Some great gig stories. And a little bit of James Kotak information in there as well. Some docking. All kinds of good stuff going on in this interview. Richie did a great job. And with that, why don't I just turn the mic over to Richie.
All right, folks. So on the line, I've got Johnny B. Frank from the reformed version of Kingdom Come, who are going on tour soon. So how are we doing, Johnny?
Doing pretty good. I usually go by JB Frank now.
JB.
Johnny, Johnny is what my mom called me.
I don't want to get in trouble, so I'll call you JB then.
All right, thanks.
So, of course, we'll talk about the reunion in a little bit, but I do want to go back to the early days with the band. Now, we did a project, we're in the middle of actually running it on Little Mountain Sound in Vancouver, and we had James talk about his memories of recording the debut in Vancouver. Can you just share some of your memories of that album?
Well, yeah, it was great. Bob Rock, we were the first major act that Bob Rock produced. And so it was great working with him. He just had a really great ears and good recording ideas, you know, and we were kind of on the same page. He, I guess it's no mystery. We kind of wanted to sound, you know, our big heroes were Led Zeppelin. And we thought that John Bonham had the greatest drum sound ever. So we were trying to get something natural like that. You know, we wanted a big recording studio, about half the size of a basketball court, and high ceiling, lots of natural echo. Mm-hmm. And that's what Bob Rock had available there at New Mountain Studios in Vancouver. So we went there. The whole studio was booked out. It was us and Steven Tyler was in there working on some songs, I guess, that were to be on the next Aerosmith album. And he was there by himself, though, you know, and he was playing drums and laying down some piano and stuff. And it was really cool. A real fine gentleman, Steven Tyler was. Got to hang out with him. And a lot of people say I look like him. So it was interesting. I get that, you know, 3 or 4 times a day. I ask if I'm Steven Tyler. And I said, yeah, no, I've got to hang out with him before. And he's a cool guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we did after we were there recording for about a month, we went down to a club with Steven Tyler. I can't remember the name of the club, but they had a live band there. And then Kingdom Come, which was, it was just 4 piece at the time. It was just me and James Kotek and Danny Stagg and Lenny Wolf. And we went and played 4 piece. And there was maybe like 25 people in the audience, and one of them was Steven Tyler. So it was pretty interesting, our first real live show, because we were pretty much a corporate band put together by Derek Shulman, who was the founder of, I can't think of the name of the band now.
The label, Atco?
Yeah. Well, no, it was Polygram.
Oh.
Mercury Polygram. I'm different in different countries, but it was a Polygram label.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bugging because I can't think of Derek Shulman's band. It was like, I want to say Little Feet, but it wasn't that. It was Gentle Giant.
Okay.
That was it. Gentle Giant, yeah. And I think him and his brother started that band, the bass player and lead singer. And so he had signed Bon Jovi to a deal, and then he had signed Cinderella to a deal. And then they gave him, because those two bands had done so well, they said, well, whatever you want to do is okay with us. So he said, well, I'd like to put a band together that, you know, is in the tradition of Led Zeppelin and classic rock bands, you know, Yardbirds, bands that came out of, you know, Eric Clapton, Cream, stuff like that. And so we were all into it. Everybody's very much into that style of music. Danny Stagg, very good blues guitarist. And Lenny was, you know, really wanted that that sound, that bluesy sound. He has a high voice, but he really liked the blues. So we, you know, got together and, you know, wrote the whole first album. Lenny had a few of the songs, and then we kind of developed a lot of it together. And we had a good, you know, there was a huge cattle call in Los Angeles. And so there was a lot of people trying out for the band. It was one of those guaranteed success bands, you know, big signing. Mm-hmm. and signing bonuses and guaranteed salaries and stuff. And it was a big signing frenzy actually happening in Los Angeles at the time. David Geffen had announced in 1986 that he was going to sign 100 bands off the streets of L.A. So there was just everywhere you looked, there was a band playing and big crowds. The Rock City News was the local rock rag run by Reuben Blue, good friend of mine. And it was, about 150 pages thick, full of ads and stories. And, 10 years later, it was about 3 pages. LA was happening.
Yeah.
It was a real scene. There was all kinds of good music happening. Everybody had their sound and, I was in like 3 different bands. I was in Johnny Crash and World War III, which both got record deals too. But I chose to go with Kingdom Come because of the priority business stuff in line. And I was a big fan of Stone Fury, which was Lenny's band before that. And I always liked that song, Break Down the Wall. To play with him, I wasn't too into World War III.
Was that Mandy Lyons' band?
Mandy Lyons, yeah. I wasn't a big fan of his music too much.
Okay.
And then the other band was Johnny Crash, which was really good friends of mine. Were in that band, and best friends. Chris Neely, August Warshell. And Vicky James Wright was the lead singer. He had a really, I loved AC/DC, and he sounded like Bon Scott. He was from England. And just a super great personality front man, and really funny guy,
Yeah.
He could do a good Irish accent.
That's good.
And a Scottish accent.
All right. That's a hard one. Even I can't do a good Scottish accent.
Right.
No, I can't.
Yeah.
So,
well, in America, we can't tell the difference. And I remember when I was in England, someone asked me if I was from Australia, and I was thinking, that's weird.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. Johnny, when the album comes out, now I'm living in Ireland at the time, so the European audience, they kind of had an agenda against you guys over there for the sound of the album.
Right.
And I have often wanted to ask someone in the band, was the reaction the same in the US as it was in Europe?
No, I think we didn't even really see that in Europe so much. And Kerrang! Magazine was, waiting for us the minute we got off the plane there for our first tour. And our first tour was in Europe. And we got a lot of enthusiasm, and we opened for a band called Magnum, and their fans seemed to really like us. It was mostly men. It was mostly teenage boys, and you know, there was not that many women in the audience, and they seemed to really like us. And there was a few articles that, you know, suggested we were a bit derivative of the Led Zeppelin sound, but we didn't really let it bring us down too much, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, we were, as we were touring in Europe, we were breaking records in the United States, staying at number one for a record-breaking 7 weeks in a row. And things were going good. We were pretty happy.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. It just seemed to me that you guys were the people that they were going after. It was you. There was, in a lesser way, I think Whitesnake at the time. You were definitely going. Kerrang definitely went after you guys. Because I used to buy Kerrang over there religiously every 2 weeks. And before the album even came out, they were saying, "Oh, there's this band, Kingdom Come, and they're a Led Zeppelin clone band." And you know,
well, it was hard not to be influenced by Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
At the time, there was 250 radio stations in the world that were playing 1 to 5 hours of Get the Lead Out every day. You know, so it was like, no matter where you turned, you were going to hear a Led Zeppelin song. They couldn't have been more popular at the time. And I think that was fueled by, you know, there was Whitesnake, there was Kingdom Come, you know, even Def Leppard seemed to borrow from the Cult. Had that one song where they you know, sounded just like Led Zeppelin in a couple of spots. So everybody was kind of borrowing from that. We just kind of got, you know, I think when Ozzy Osbourne and Gary Moore put out the song Led Clones, and they kind of took the riff right from us, which we kind of took right from Black Dog. And now, by the way, I just heard a new Def Leppard song that's got about the same riff in it. So, you know,
I think
good riffs never die.
Yeah, I think everybody borrows off everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, whatever you love, you can't help but copy.
You know?
So I was no big, you know, if anyone wanted to compare me to John Paul Jones, I was nothing but flattered.
You know?
Yeah. He was an amazing bass player, and I also play keyboard, so... you know, I got to play on, but I had played at that time more keyboards on albums and studio work around LA than I had bass. So, so I was, you know, really primed about, you know, that whole sound and what was happening anyway.
Yeah. Now, James told us when we talked to him that your first show as a band was on the opening night of the Monsters of Rock tour in the US in a stadium. What was going through your head before you went on stage that night? Can you remember?
Oh, well, that was in it was in Chicago, I believe. And we were staying at the old Playboy Mansion in Chicago, and we got a ride there with the helicopter pilot that actually died in a helicopter crash 2 weeks later with Stevie Ray Vaughan. And he was kind of a maniac, and he liked, you know, if you liked the helicopter ride, then he would take you up on another one, you know, and you zoom the cornfields, you know, like a couple of feet above the corn things and then just miss the tree line. So it was like a roller coaster ride. And so, you know, getting that exciting helicopter ride to stage the first time, and then he flew over the audience a few times so we could wave at the audience, and it was really exciting. You know, I showed up there, and Ken Hensley, I'm sorry, can you hold on 1 second?
Sure.
Yeah, so anyway, it was pretty exciting. We, you know, zoomed the audience. It was a full house at, you know, for our show at 1:30, and lots of people there. And Ken Hensley was the St. Louis Music, and he had just signed all five bass players, you know, to a MPEG deal.
Yeah.
And so when I got there, I had 24 bass cabinets on stage, and... you know, five SVTs powered by two other St. Louis Music 5000 watt amplifiers. And I was like, wow, this is big time. I get to play through 24 Ampeg amplifiers. And, so I was just, you know, like a kid in a candy store, you know, and I've always been an equipment freak, you know, love good guitars and good basses and, you know, good keyboards and stuff. So I was like, I was pretty happy. The endorphins and the dopamines were, you know, spiking. So I was pretty happy. And we went on, we had a really good show. I was a little nervous, you know, playing America.
Yeah.
For the first time, the first time I'd ever played for that many people. I'd done some pretty big shows with other bands, but never, you know, 55,000 people at, you know, 1:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, that's a tour now that when I was living in Ireland, like we had the Monsters of Rock in Donington that had like six really top class bands on it. And when I saw the lineup for that tour in the States, I was like, wow, like that could be in Donington in England, no problem. Like that. And what you played, what, every two or three days there was a show for like 20 shows?
Yeah, and there was no bosses, so there was the Monsters of Rock airplane. So all five bands were on the same 747, and you know, because we would do one show on one coast and then the next show would be on the other, so they wouldn't be too close together.
Yeah,
and so it was pretty exciting. All five bands on one, you know, one plane. You know.
A lot of partying going on.
Yeah, there was some partying going on, just a little showing off, you know, everybody was a little crazy and, you know, nice lineup of stewardesses and, yeah, it was a great time. Lots of good champagne and, you know, who knows what else is going on.
What goes on tour stays on tour, Johnny.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I want to go on to the next record, the In Your Face record. And to me, that I think there's a lot of maturity on that album. I think it's a fantastic album.
Okay.
You went for Keith Olsen on that one. Did you try and get Bob Rock for it? Or did you just... What was the thought process behind getting Keith on it?
Yeah, Bob Rock was booked for the next 10 years. I remember going to the Rainbow and seeing Tommy Lee and Mickey Six there. And they were like, wow, your album sounds great. And you know, we said, yeah, it's Bob Rock, you know. And then so they called him immediately for their next album, which was Dr. Feelgood, which was the biggest album they had ever had. Mm-hmm. The call went in with him, and that was the biggest album the call ever had. Now, Bob Rock was so impressed with James Kotak, as a drummer, because we did everything without a click track and we did a lot of stuff on first takes. And he said, you know, the call in here next is my next project. And we, do you know any drummers? They don't have a drummer they're recording with, right? And Matt Swarm had been in a band with me and Danny Stagg, actually a couple bands with me and Danny Stagg. And I said, you want to get a hold of Matt Swarm? So they picked him up for the album. And the rest was history with him. You know, he started, he did their album and toured with them. And then he got Guns N' Roses. So it was like everything in Los Angeles was turning to gold, you know. And so Bob Rock was really packed up, and Keith Olsen was available. He liked his work, you know, loved Ozzy Osbourne and loved Rumors and, you know, played with Mac, and you know, he's just a fine producer.
Yeah. Now, what's the difference, Johnny, between the way he produces and the way Bob Rock produces?
I don't know. You know, I think Bob Rock, you know, was a little more organic, you know, and you really wanted to keep things true, not so many triggers and stuff like that. And Keith Olsen was more or less just, you know, let's get down and do it. You know, there's no wrong way to do it. You know, we're going to come up with what we came up with. And then, you know, I think Lenny was more involved in the production of the second album, and the band was more involved in the writing in the second album. And it was good. As far as the albums go, I think, the second album was better in some ways, but Maybe not sonically as good. You know, I think Bob Rock just has golden ears. You know, he's got the Midas touch when it comes to producing people. And not that Keith Olsen didn't, but we were a hard slam and Zeppelin type band, and we were looking for, you know, that sound again. And we got it on the second album, but I think the first album had just a little more, just that sound we were looking for.
Yeah. I think, Johnny, the second record was definitely better received than the first one. I think it surprised a lot of people that it seemed to have, how would I say it? It was definitely a more mature album. It was very varied in places.
Yeah.
I definitely remember Kerrang were like, whoa, hang on a second, maybe we misjudged these guys. Because when I was growing up in Ireland, Kerrang was the Bible, and whatever really Kerrang said, you went with, you know?
Right, yeah, I think a lot of people thought that, yeah.
Yeah.
There was, Do You Like It was kind of a departure from the first album. It was more of an up-tempo, straight-ahead rock song. And then, Stargazer.
Yeah.
Was one of my favorite songs on the second album, and I just liked everything about that song, you know, and can't wait to get out on tour again and play it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, maybe there's some other songs on the second album that didn't chart, like, you know, we had five songs that made it to the top 20 on the first album, but on the second album, there was only a couple of songs that actually got up to the charts. But there was a song called Perfect O on there.
Yeah, it's a great track.
Yeah, I loved it. There was a lot of good stuff on the second album, too.
Yeah, I love Overrated.
Everywhere we went, AC/DC was in the same town, and then we were going to play the same place they were playing like 2 days later, and we kept going to AC/DC shows. So I think Overrated definitely had a AC/DC kind of influence on it, and we were just psyched about AC/DC. We got to hang backstage with them, see a good fist fight between Malcolm and Angus. Just got to experience AC/DC on, the full.
Yeah.
What AC/DC is about.
Yeah. So, but of course, Johnny, again, like a lot of my early history with rock music in the US goes through Kerrang, and I pick up Kerrang one week, and I think you were gone, and Rick was gone, and James was gone, and Danny was gone. Like, what were the circumstances for you for leaving the band?
Well, there was a lot of, turbulence in the band, I think,
Yeah.
And, you know, Lenny was a ball of fire, you know, and he was young and, you know, maybe his hormones were a little out of control.
Yeah.
Whatever. But I'm not here to judge him either. You know, he had a rough childhood, you know, in Germany, and he worked as a bouncer. You know, he was a real tough guy, you know.
Yeah.
I thought him and George Lynch were going to get a fight once, and George Lynch, if you remember, had muscles all over the place. I would have put my money on Lenny Wolf. You know, the guy was just, you know, you could just feel the energy coming out of him. He was just a ball of energy, you know, and it was hard to be around sometimes, you know, and I think we all respected his music and stuff, but we were doing a tour with Warren, and it just came down to one show where it was on a rider that the audience wasn't supposed to see our sound check, and we were playing someplace in Tennessee or Kentucky or something, and it was some guy's farm, you know, and it held like 10,000 people, and as we were doing our sound check, he let people in to the sound check, you know, through the gate. And then he got really mad at the guy and said, screw this, we're not going to do the show. You've broken the contract, pay us and we'll leave. And the guy was a, you know, backwoods promoter guy, you know, and he was looking at, well, you know, he's either going to lose everything. And Warren ended up playing the show anyway, but Kingdom Come didn't. And then everybody in the band disagreed, said, Lenny, you're nitpicking too much, you know. It's like, it's not that big a deal. A few people saw us sound check. And so James and Rick quit, but they had another project sitting in the wings with Johnny Edwards from Foreigner, who was James's best friend from Buster Brown. And then this guy, the farmer got on the bus. He was threatened to shoot us or something, and Lenny was just like, oh, do you think I'm afraid of guns? And I was like, hey, Lenny, I'm afraid of guns. So at that point, we all just kind of said, no, screw this. Nothing's worth, you know, this kind of insanity. You know, it didn't matter if we were going to do a third album. And then the record label really wanted us to put us back together, but James and Rick didn't want to do it. And I think me and Danny Stagg would have re-signed the deal, but Lenny was, you know, had his own plans at that time. He was back to Germany, and I think he wanted to put a German band together. He just wanted to record a third album, you know. So that was it.
Yeah. Now, of course, in the late 90s, we'll start talking about the Reformation. In the late 90s, John Kalodner did a label called Portrait, and he got a lot of the 80s bands together. There was Cinderella, who did demos but never released anything. Rat did a record with Richie Zito, and Great White did a record. Was there ever any talk of him getting you guys back together? Do you remember any rumors around that time?
Well, I remember Lenny calling me from Germany, and he asked me if I wanted to tour with them, you know, and at the time I was making so much money as I was doing music production in Los Angeles. I was a producer. I produced Diane Warren, which was, she was the biggest songwriter ever in the world. Mm-hmm. She's now outsold the Beatles and the Rolling Stones combined. And, she was paying me really well to produce her tracks, you know, the demos to be shown to people. I was getting paid well. And then Lenny's offer came, and it wasn't enough for me to, you know, I had gotten married by that time, and, you know, it just wasn't enough for me to leave Los Angeles and the good money I was making. And, I had another offer to play bass for Vince Neil, but it was the same deal. It was, you know, $450 a week or something. So it was like, well, I can't do that. You know, my rent's $4,000 a month, you know.
Yeah.
And mortgage payments and, you know, I own three cars, a boat, and two motorcycles, and, you know, life was good.
Yeah. You know, so did you keep track of what Lenny was actually releasing under the Kingdom Come name?
I didn't. No, not really. I remember I walked in a strip bar in North Hollywood, and they said, "Oh, the bass player from Kingdom Come's here," and they put on some song. I think it was The Hands of Time or something. It was off their third album that I'd never heard, and I was kind of shocked. You know, I was like, "Wow, a Kingdom Come song that I'm not playing bass on." So, but you know, and it was weird because I'd heard Lenny most of the stuff off that album. He had been working on anyway. You know, it was like a lot of stuff I'd already heard. Basic ideas for those songs. You know?
Yeah.
But I think Lenny's number one, a great singer, you know, and he's a really good musician. You know, he can produce really good tracks, you know, and he's a good songwriter as far as his style goes.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I was working with Diane Warren and people who were called professional songwriters at the time. And so I was like, well, he's not writing songs like that, but, you know, but he writes good Lenny Wolf songs, you know. But and nothing really ever happened with Kingdom Come, besides where they stayed alive with a German lineup, you know. And I would listen to it, and I didn't think it was good as us. You know, he never found a drummer as good as James Kotak, and he never found a lead guitar player as good as James Gagg.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my opinion.
Yeah. So over the years, Johnny, would there have been, you know, there's been bands brought back for like Rocklahoma and these festivals for one-off gigs. Like, did this come up every year over, say, the last 10 years? Like, why don't we get Kingdom Come back together?
It did come up several times, you know. I remember me and James and Lenny met in Los Angeles a few times, and Rick was there too. Danny had already moved to Pittsburgh, and we played some show at a Half in Harry night or something at the joint, you know, on Pico there in Los Angeles. And Kingdom Come got up, and we did a couple songs, you know, mm-hmm. and we talked about it, and then it never came together. You know, James Rawls wanted to do this on his time off from the Scorpion.
Yeah.
But as soon as we booked something, then the Scorpions would say, "I'm sorry, we just added some shows and you can't do it, James." So it's gone, you know. So we tried. And then a couple of years ago, you know, James was like, "Well, the Scorpions are retiring now," you know, which a lot of bands announced that, and it never happened. The Rolling Stones have been saying that since 1980. You know? So I was like, wow, that's good, because the original lineup, James was, you know, James can fill a club by himself, you know, with his band Kotak. Mm. So we were ready to put it back together. Lenny was into it, and things just didn't work out. You know, again, the Scorpions started booking shows, and I look forward to that time when the actual original band can line up and do it again.
So the lineup now has got Danny on in it, you're in it, and Lenny. Who's the drummer in the band?
A guy named Heinrich.
Yeah.
And he's an amazing drummer. He is really good, you know. And so I didn't like the drummer they had for a while. He was just kind of a sleeper, you know. I mean, he sounded okay. He looked like he was falling asleep, and he was just not James Kotak. You know, James was really exciting to watch, and, you know, and his power can be felt in every note. But and then they got Heinrich, and he's a really good drummer. I'm looking forward to doing some shows with him. I think I can groove with him. And then Lenny says, "I've never, there's a rhythm guitar player coming along from Germany too. I think his name's, I think it's Lyle or Lils or something like that, L-L-Y-L-F.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he's an amazing guitar player. But so he's going to play rhythm guitar. He's going to do Rick's parts.
Yeah. Did you try to get Rick at all?
Yeah, we tried to get Rick. He's married, got two kids, and a business. It's a very successful business teaching guitar. And he said that he could tour like 3 months out of the year, and he wasn't available for this tour.
Okay. So,
we're still looking forward to that too. Rick's a good guy and a good friend and a good, really good guitar player. So
yeah, and are you only going to be playing stuff from the records you played on, like the first two, or do you know like what else are you going to be playing?
We're trying to find the best material, and Lenny, I think, wrote some really good stuff after us that we've been trying to mine out some of. I had some conversations with Lenny, which songs we should do, and there's some really good stuff.
Yeah.
So we're doing about 60% of the stuff off the first two albums, and then about 40% of his stuff off the next four albums, three or four albums, whatever Lenny did there.
Okay. Any of the tracks from the first two you never played live before? Are you going to be playing any of those?
Off the first two albums, we're doing a lot of stuff off the first two albums.
But is there anything on them you've never played live before that you're going to be doing for the first time?
No, I don't believe so. We're taking the best off the first two albums. And that was the good thing about it. After we had a second album out, we had a big repertoire of songs to when you're putting a set together, you want to put it down where, you got your ballad at the right place. You got your fast songs at the right place. Your slow groovers at the right place. So we had it seemed like the set got really powerful when we had two albums to draw from.
Yeah. So do you think, Johnny, when you started playing these songs, do you think like they'll change a little bit? Because like you've all grown as men, like the first two records are like 20 something years ago. Do you think like they're going to change a little bit, or are you just going to stay true to the way they were recorded originally?
I am going to try and play them like they were originally recorded.
Yeah.
I sit here and practice this stuff, getting ready to go to rehearse. We start rehearsals next week in Miami.
Mm.
And of course, I've got a lot of ideas, and I'll probably try to squeeze a few of them in, I'm going to try to stay pretty close to what we did on the first two albums,
Yeah.
I throw a little riff in here and there that is a new idea. But, for me, Kingdom Comes was all in the rhythm section, it's about playing the bass hard and playing it simple, and just accentuating the beat and supporting the guitar lines and stuff. So it's, even if I played as good as Billy Sheehan, I probably wouldn't change much.
Yeah. So can you tell us, Johnny, about some of the shows you've got coming up? I think the Monsters of Rock Cruise is one of them.
Yeah. And then we booked several shows after that were in around Texas, Florida, Virginia, Tennessee. And I don't think we're going to do them because of the work permit problem. So we're going to put that off. I think the Germans will go home after the cruise, and then we'll shoot for something like 2 or 3 months from now.
Okay.
And of course for the summer, so that all the work permits can get lined up, and hopefully we'll, do a couple month tour that makes sense for everybody. And we'll hit some, major markets in the United States and
yeah.
Canada. Canada just changed the content laws, so it's easier to work there now, and their permit laws. So we're looking forward to playing Canada, and I'd like to play all up and down the West Coast, and like to go to my hometown in Ohio again and play Cleveland. And,
Johnny, try come up our way, will you? Up Boston way.
I love these. I love it up there. I like it up there more in the summer.
I don't blame you. I have to say, Johnny, it's great that, you know, you guys are back together, and it seems to me that, it, you know, you're planning on doing more shows than just the Monsters of Rock cruise, which is great to hear.
We're planning on doing it. I hope that all comes together. I'm kind of disappointed that we're not doing those shows, but we can't really go against the German government when it comes to work permits, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we could bribe a few officials. I don't know, but it's not going to happen this time, you know.
Yeah. So we were
supposed to be in Russia. We had 4 shows booked in Russia, and kind of because of the political problems, we had to can those too. And then James was going to do that with us, and then the Scorpions double booked something. So we were like, and then it was like, well, do we really want to be in Russia right now? As you know, they're lining up weapons on each side of Turkey or whatever. I'm not a very political person. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't want to be, ending up in a prisoner of war camp.
Yeah. When it comes to James, I don't think the Scorpions are ever going to retire.
Yeah, that could be. That could be, you know.
Yeah.
But,
so,
you know, yeah. I don't blame them.
So, Johnny, before we let you go, can you tell us what the websites are for the band? Do you have Twitter, Facebook, all those things?
I don't know what really the plans are for internet and stuff. I'm on Facebook, and I try to, you know, talk to everybody on that. And, I've written a movie. You know, it's a rock and roll movie. It's a rock and roll Twilight Zone that is very faithful to a new movement in the world where I think people are awakening up. It's similar to the hippie movement of the 60s and 70s, but it's, you know, now it's more people are going to yoga classes and, starting to pay attention to, I'll just call it the awakening of the conscious self. You know, their divine self.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that's very obvious in the world. And I hope to, release my movie soon. It's called Schizophrenic Sky. And it's a story of me and the other character is based on Danny Stagg and two of my other friends.
Yeah.
And it's loosely based on Kingdom Come Success. And it's just a rock and roll movie that I think it's going to affect people in an amazingly positive way.
Great.
And so I'm looking forward to being a filmmaker now and producing all the music to that. And we're going to produce all this music. It's a really important thing to me is to maybe get a plug in that we produce all of our music and an A432 hertz now instead of A440. And this is the original music scale that the Pythagoreans came up with. And it was changed in 1935 when they realized that A440 drove people a little crazy, weapons testing the Nazis did. And now the whole world listens to music in A440. And we're going to do all this music in A432, which creates sacred geometry and cyanetics and in the brain and in the water. And it gives people an innate understanding of who they actually are. So that's my purpose in life now, you know, more love, you know, more acceptance and, more compassion for everybody.
I got one final question for you before I let you go. Do you have a crazy gig story or a Spinal Tap moment from your time in Kingdom Come?
A crazy gig story.
Yeah, or a Spinal Tap moment.
Let me think about that. The first thing that comes to mind is being with James and Rick. They were like, they had this Three Stooges kind of thing worked out, you know, where when somebody said the same, you know, like if they both said the same thing at the same time, in an interview, which happened all the time. They would go into this routine where, and then they would actually fake that they were getting into a fight and actually throw punches at each other. But it was just, they had this perfect timing worked out. Like James would put up his hand as Rick was throwing his fist, and it sounded like he got hit in the face. And they pulled it off. most of the time, they probably did it like 25 times in front of us. And I don't know. It was just a real pleasure. They were beyond rock musicians. They were heavy entertainers. That's all I can think of now.
Yeah. All right, Johnny. Well, we'll let you go. And it's great that you're back with the band. And I hope you get, you know, some more shows in the summer, and hopefully it'll come up my way.
Excellent. Yeah, let me know when this interview comes out.
Yep, we'll do, Johnny.
Okay, thank you so much for your time, Rich. God bless you. Namaste.
No problem, Johnny. Have a good rest of the night.
Okay, sure.
Okay, bye.
Alright, metalheads, that is a wrap for another week here on Focus on Metal. And as always, if you want to keep up with all things Focus on Metal, you can head up to focusonmetal.net or focusonmetal.blogspot.com. You can reach out to Richie on Facebook, tell him how much you like this week's episode, and you can also keep up with me on Twitter. Not sure what's in store for next week, but I guarantee that goddamn it is going to be good. I can tell you that I have got some killer interviews already recorded, ready to go. It's just a matter of Richie and I talking, deciding what it is we're going to run next week. So that is a wrap. Put a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for Richie, myself, and everybody here at Focus on Metal, have yourselves a good metal week. And until we talk to you again next week, remember,
Focus on Metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.